Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we're already.
Hey, man.
Hello.
How are you?
Honestly, I'm doing great.
It couldn't be better.
There was a moment where I thought we might pivot today so I could let you exercise the demon that is Halloween Ends. But I feel like that would be like a 6-hour podcast.
I haven't listened to the episode.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
Which I think you put out last night.
I did go up yesterday, yes.
So that's, you know, I think I can be slightly forgiven.
You've seen the movie, though, right?
I did see the movie.
Oh, good.
We've had some side chats about it. I've said as much as I feel comfortable saying with negative about a movie that somebody else enjoys. Because you eventually get to a point where it feels very much like you don't understand, you're stupid for like.
Sure.
And that's never where I want to go. Or that you're trying to convince someone it is bad.
Sure, right.
You start thinking, man, why can't I let this person like that? you have to hate it like me.
Okay. This is all we'll say about it. I did feel like
why even say that?
Because I want the people to know that.
Well, because eventually we're going to go, yeah, Pinhead was cool in this. Unlike in Halloween.
I will say that, yes, Matt and I definitely have differing opinions on that movie, but I feel like our back and forth was friendly, like, no, you're an idiot. No, you're an idiot for liking that. it wasn't contentious or anything like that, but it was definitely two friends have very differing opinions on the movie. I broke down my responses. I thought very spreadsheety. When Matt would be like, what about this? And I was like, well, then there's this. And then I started writing their movie for them, and Matt said I should write the next one. And I said, okay.
And I think that's kind of where we ended up.
I think that is.
And these are all good ideas, Joe. I wish they were actually in the film.
Correct. But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about another rebooted franchise. One that is, for me, it's absolutely a massive blind spot. I've seen 1 through 3, but I couldn't tell you. We're talking about Hellraiser. One is the only one that I could probably like do, not beat for beat, but I know like how it works or the plot and everything. I couldn't tell you.
Just like there's these guys. Well, there's a box. Okay.
Yes.
And it gets opened and these guys show up.
Yes.
It's like a big like triangle. I could do you pretty good 1 through 4.
Okay.
Have seen up to, well, and this is the problem. I have tried to do a series watch of Hellraiser numerous times. And similar to what happened to me with Saw before we talked about a spiral from Saw, I would, you know, when you're just doing a watch through on your own, sometimes you have pretty big gaps between movies. So I'd watch up to Hellraiser Deader and Hellraiser Hellseeker, and then I'd step away from it for a while and come back and go, I don't know where I left off. What is this?
But do those follow like a story, or like, no, is there?
So those are, once they go direct to video, which I believe 5 is the first one that didn't have any theatrical release.
Okay.
I don't remember if I have actually read this, but I'm pretty sure they're all scripts for other movies that
I've heard that as well. Yeah.
The Cenobites, and they all kind of feel like Tales from the Crypt episodes. Like, usually they'll or at least the two or three I saw for sure will kind of have like a twist at the end that, like,
oh,
it wasn't how you thought. It was actually this.
With Adam Scott and Henry Cavill.
Well, that's 4. Now, 4's pretty good. And especially as far as the in space horror movies go.
Sure.
I think it's one of the, it's not good. Hold on. Or someone goes, oh, Met's just really good, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, right.
No, like, really good. It is, there's certainly a dip between 4 to 5.
Okay.
But I liked 5. I thought 5 was cool. And then they bring Kirstie back, I think, for 6.
Okay.
But same deal. And I'll spoil that one for everyone and get kind of an idea of what they become at that point. Kirstie and her husband are on a drive, which could be anybody. It doesn't matter that it's Kirstie. She doesn't really have much of a, didn't have to be her. I mean, they,
so she's the daughter in, yes, one.
Yeah.
But she's not really like the main character. Right. Or is she
her and Julia, I guess.
Okay.
Kind of like a duel, you know,
you
get her side and her Julia's side, but they crash the car. Kirstie dies. The husband then goes on and he's tormented by these Cenobites and everything, and it's all crazy.
Yeah.
And then the end of that one is that you find out he actually died in the car accident, and Kirstie, because he was being unfaithful or something, offered him up to the Cenobites prior to the movie even starting. So that's sort of the twist of that one.
Okay.
And that's sort of what they are. Then there's one that's MMORPG. I think in that one, Hellraiser is a series of movies. It gets into
The Halloween 3'd it.
And they make a game of it.
I guess Halloween 3.1, not Halloween. Yeah, that's what,
yeah.
It's so, I will say, I'll spoil the one in space. I do like the idea that the Cenobites get trapped in, like, you think they're on the space station, but it turns out they have crafted a giant lament configuration to trap the Cenobites in space,
which is, as far as horror space movies, a decent reason.
Not bad.
To be up there. They had to make a really big one. How else are you going to do it?
Yeah. But I think that, I don't know, there are definitely like diehard fans of this series, and it does kind of feel like, to your point, is they didn't really know what to do with it anymore. And mm-hmm. they would just, Scott Derrickson, I think, wrote one of these. So there's just this is kind of like it's like the forgotten child of this of the 80s slashers, because Dimension, I think, who had the rights to this, just send it straight to VHS basically what they were doing. I think there was a moment where Halloween was going to go the same way. I don't know if it was I think it may have been like post Halloween 6, where it was like on the cutting board to stop getting theatrical releases and just going straight to, could you imagine the amount of insanity? If you think Halloween Ends is bonkers, like, just imagine where they're like, hey man, we're just going to put it on DVD anyway. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, and well, and that's like the thing with Hellraiser, right? Is you can sort of do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't. I mean, I like Kirstie, I like that actress and everything, but it's, you don't really need to follow her around. And how many times can she run into these?
It's true. It is. I was actually thinking about this the other day. Halloween is the only franchise that never deviated from the Strode family.
Right.
It's the, I mean, it's Laurie. It's the Strode family in some form or fashion in every single movie, where Friday never really goes back to a previous final girl. You get the brother of a final girl in four. I think it's four.
For some reason, I thought that wasn't even a character. Oh, I guess it is, though.
Yeah, he's the brother of one of the.
I was thinking that was someone they just made up. The sister wasn't.
Oh, no. She was a character. Heather Langenkamp comes back in one of, well, I guess technically two of the Nightmare movies, but is also killed off, spoilers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in Halloween, they're like, can we just keep making it Strode relatives?
I guess once you make that sister connection, sort of makes sense, I guess.
I guess, sure, we'll go
with
that.
But I would say, I don't know what they would have done with Halloween.
I mean, you can do whatever you want. That's the same thing.
Michael Myers. If they're going direct to video, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Especially at that point, you got to have that mask on the cover.
There's
no way people would care. And so now, but with Hellraiser, it is kind of, you can do whatever you want, which is almost maybe harder because there's no lanes, there's no constrictions on what the story can be. You just got to get these leather daddies in there.
Yeah. And that this is very like the series is definitely like a very BDSM.
Yeah.
Inspired.
Which
movie. Like,
and I've seen this complaint about the new one and I might agree. Not horny enough.
There's definitely some horniness. Actually, I think there's more humor in this than I kind of anticipated, which is fine. Like, I think humor and horror are, you know, you got peanut butter, my chocolate, you got chocolate, my peanut butter. But I do agree that there's only like two. Well, there's the big orgy, like sex party in the very beginning. And then our main character, you know, hooking up. And they don't really leave a lot to the imagination when we see them hooking up.
That's true.
But there is a level of like horniness and to the original ones that I do think is missing a little bit.
I felt like in the original, the idea was that you're experiencing equal amounts of pleasure and pain at the same time.
Yes.
And in this one, the Cenobites just had a different understanding of what pleasure was.
Yes.
Like, they just thought, well, getting sliced up, hell yeah, baby. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right.
But I do, I mean, look, could have used a little more horny, but I do think they did still make the Cenobites not evil, which is important because, like, in Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Oh,
it's about Pinhead wanting to come to Earth and just kill a bunch of people. And it is still a fun movie, but it's not really. I don't think it's the coolest way to present those characters. They become like slasher.
I was going to ask, like, that those first two, at least, like, it's not, they're not like the villains.
They're
to your point, like, they're the knife that like the villains have used, right?
Yes.
And then they become the villains, right? Like, through as the series, as
story,
right,
means or anything, just
right.
Yeah.
Well, with all that being said, what did you think of this one?
I liked it.
I think this is really good. It's interesting to see Hulu having success back to back with this and then with Prey.
Yeah.
Like, and I just wonder if maybe they found a niche where it's like, we've got these, there's these properties that have fallen out of favor in theaters, right? The Predator series, the one where they go to the Predators?
Predators. Yes.
Did okay. And then the Shane Black one was not okay. And that kind of killed that franchise in theaters. Obviously, Hellraiser hasn't had a movie in theaters since part four. Is that what you think? Mm-hmm. Part four?
Yeah.
And they get really good people in, like, people who may have like a love for the series, or some, kind of like David Gordon Green, I feel like had in the first one, probably still does, but there is like a weird drop off from 2018 to the next one. I don't disagree with that.
And I know we already said the last thing about Halloween, but it does almost feel like they got like bored with it, and, or with
interesting
that sure. story of like Michael Myers, and they wanted to kind of do some different things and tried to put that,
which up. I'm on board with, right? Like you can do different things with it, but I do agree that like he maybe did get.
Well, and like it feels to me like instead of doing different things with it, they did different things and put Halloween on in top of it into it, slotted it in.
Yeah, right.
And it just didn't work for me.
I appreciate
much
that.
Much nicer way than I put it in our chat.
It's true.
Off.
Yeah.
You're a idiot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, sorry. But Dan Trachtenberg directed Prey. And then this one is also an interesting director who I didn't realize that I liked as much as I did until I saw his credits. So he directed The Signal, which from 2007, which we haven't seen. I do highly recommend. He did a segment for the first VHS, the one called Amateur Night, which is also, I think VHS 1 and 2, I think are fantastic if you haven't seen those. He directed The Ritual from 2017, which was a Netflix movie based on a book that has a really good monster in it. I don't really know how else to describe it. I don't want to give anything away. He did The Night House, which was highly, I haven't seen that, with Rebecca Hall, I think.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah.
I've heard amazing things about it. And now he did Hellraiser in 2022, and he is a part of VHS 85, which I've liked the VHS movies. I think there's obviously ones that aren't the best.
Such is the nature of an anthology movie.
That's exactly it. You might get one or two that are stellar, but then you get some other ones that are not. But I will say that those first two VHS movies, I think you get Ty West is in there. I think who's the guy that did The Raid? Gareth Edwards?
Gareth.
Have you ever seen The Raid?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Raid 1 and 2 are some of the best action movies ever made. But that guy's in there. I think that's who that is. I feel like I have a way to look at it and tell me exactly what the guy's name is.
Could you imagine if I looked it up while you were talking? To save us this pause.
Gareth Edwards is the director who I was thinking of. But this is David.
I had faith in you. So
thank you very much. Drive. Which you shouldn't at this point, honestly. But David Bruckner is kind of tasked with making Hellraiser relevant again. And I think he hits a massive home run with this one.
Yeah.
This is a very competent, and what I mean by that is because I feel like everything post 4, to your point, is like not incompetent but also not really a Hellraiser movie. They just threw Cenobites into a script, where this one you could say it's a reboot, or you could just say it's just another Hellraiser story
pretty much. I mean, I guess the box sort of works in a different way.
That's true,
but I don't know. Who says hell can't change it up? They had a meeting.
HR was like, hey, man, we got to figure this shit out.
Yeah. And then one of Cenobites was like, well, I have an idea. And the whole boardroom looks over at him. And he says, like, what if it was like you had to give it 6 souls and then you got a wish? And then like all the guys are like, oh, my gosh.
Look at this. Go get me some coffee.
And then Leviathan goes, I love it. And everyone's like, oh, me too.
This is the kind of thinking outside the box we've been looking for.
Oh, I bet they say that all the time. That's so good.
You know, some guy said it. I just picture David Bruckner on set being like, God, fired.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Yeah,
get out.
But Leviathan loves it. He's kind of a funny guy. And now they're hilarious.
They are very funny.
Cenobites are cracking wise all the time.
And this is kind of reminiscent of the Evil Dead movie, the Evil Dead remake.
Sure. Yeah.
Where our main character is an addict, and the things that she's seeing could be attributed to her either being high or being in withdrawal.
Yeah.
And your main characters, the people around her are like, man, this broad is bonkers. Like, this is, you know, you're not okay, and this isn't all right. When in reality, she is right. Which I was like, okay, well, we did just see this, but And I say we, I mean you and I.
We just watch, yes,
yeah,
right.
We just watch those.
Been a minute for maybe some other.
Right, right. But I think that the gore is really good. They update it, obviously, for 2022. I think we can briefly talk about the quote-unquote controversy that Pinhead is not Doug Bradley in this one. And when did he stop being Pinhead?
The last two.
Okay. Okay.
Which I think are 8 and 9.
Okay.
In them.
And it's, you know, it's recast as a woman. The woman's name is Jamie Clayton, who plays. It's interesting that she's not called Pinhead in her credits. She's called the priest.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, I love to prepare. You know, I like to know what's going on. I didn't watch all the direct-to-video. I haven't seen them all yet, but I did read The Hellbound Heart.
Okay.
The novella that the film is based on by Clive Barker.
Yes.
Now, I've heard all over the place people saying, well, it's actually more faithful to the source material.
Interesting.
And it's interesting, I think, things get sort of regurgitated through the internet until people who have no idea are saying that, you know. So I think it started with people saying that, like, I guess the look of Pinhead is more faithful.
Okay.
The story is absolutely not. The story of the novella is the first movie. Beat for beat, it's exactly the same. Kirstie's in there. Julia's in there. Frank. It starts with Frank opening the box.
Okay. Okay.
Now, Kirstie is Larry's friend, and Larry's named Rory in the book.
It's not his daughter?
It's not his daughter in the book. And that actually took me a long time to figure out, because I don't really know. She comes around, but she keeps calling him Rory, and I'm like, well, that's kind of another day.
Who the fuck is Rory?
And I'm just like, why is she showing up all the time? It's kind of a weird. I think she, like, is romantically interested in him, but he's married to Julia. Anyway, the story is completely not more faithful to the book.
Okay.
But then people are like, oh, the look of Pinhead, actually described with a feminine voice and whatever. But like Pinhead, I think that's a little inaccurate too, because they briefly describe some of the Cenobites when they first show up.
Okay.
And they do say there's one with pins in its head. And it talks like a little girl, the one before.
Oh, that would be super creepy.
The one they talk about, because people will say, oh, you can't even tell if it's a man or a woman. I think that's the one before it. And then Frank spends the most time talking to a different one that's sitting on a pile of skulls with tongues lined up on its legs. My point is, the character Pinhead is just not in the book. There is one with pins in its head.
Sure.
But they all share his sort of characterization, and that's spread across different people. And so to be any kind of upset is ridiculous. And then I think it's almost equally as ridiculous to try and, like, quote, defend it by saying it's more faithful to the book, because for one, that's not really what I would call true, and it's also just like, who gives it? Because what if it's not? And that's the thing that gets me with people like that. They're arguing that, like, no, it's okay that it's a woman because it's more faithful to the source material. And
I just don't.
Maybe it's more okay that it's a woman because it does not matter. And
I agree.
And it's fun to change parts up, like.
I think that there are certain characters that, even for me, right? I think that if you as a fan are invested in a character,
sure.
I think that it is harder to when they cast someone that's maybe a different gender or race, it is a little jarring, right?
And it can depend, I feel like, on what it seems like the intent of the filmmakers is. Because I do think there's times that they do, like, stunt casting that's a little like, oh, you're trying to appeal to, you know, a more progressive audience in a way.
Do you have one that comes to mind when you say that?
I would say I do think that's probably what they're doing with the Little Mermaid, but I don't think that one matters. I don't care that one. Well, and again, I always think it's fine.
We've said many times that you don't care.
I don't give a fuck. Yeah,
you remake, or recast, do whatever the fuck. Well, doesn't matter.
There is like some, I guess, cynicism on my end that in a boardroom, someone was saying, and we'll get a person of color, and it'll be so that their intent isn't necessarily like the best intent, even if right. the end result is good. And I think it is. I think that is an important thing. But you know, right? If they made a new Nightmare on Elm Street, and now they're like, it's not Freddy anymore. You know, it's Paulina Kruger. It would come off, I think, like, well,
but that's okay. To that point, that story doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you can't. I mean, like, you can do whatever you want. To your point, you're absolutely right. But when you're saying that, I mean, you have to change the entire story of Freddy Krueger's background to make totally. That work, which and is if, fine if that's what you want to do.
Maybe they have a way to justify it.
Yeah. 2010's remake shot that franchise in the foot. So
yeah,
we haven't had one since then.
And like you're saying, I think like you would have to justify it in that to some degree. Like there are very few women serial killers. So that would be
right.
A little bit of a stretch that there's this child killer.
Right.
But maybe there's a way to do it. And if it's a cool story, it's cool. But again, if it's like a boardroom who starts from the, well, what if Freddie was a woman and was a millennial and
oh god,
his hair was cool or something like that. And again, the thing that bothers me about that is that it is like this sort of they don't care about it. They want to make the money from it. But again, good things from bad intentions can sure. end up being good things. And in the case, I do want to stress this because I absolutely don't want to be lumped in with the wrong side of Little Mermaid.
Sure, right,
I
right,
think
right.
that is a net gain across the board.
Right.
I just think they definitely, I don't.
You think the higher ups did not have the intentions, good intentions with that cast. I mean, they didn't have the idea of this character can be whoever she needs to be
there. Yes. I think that was going to be a person of color from the jump and that their intent mainly was attention and
yes.
and profit.
Sure.
And I think that, well, obviously I haven't seen the movie. It's not out yet. Right.
Right.
But that is not to say that actress is not the best for the role. I think it's going to be, you know what? I bet it's going to be fine.
It probably will be. It'll be fine.
And I think, and I do think, and like I said, I think that the outcome of that is good. I do think there needs to be more representation of people of color in films and in leading roles. Now I'm harping on it too much. I think everybody gets what I'm saying.
Yes, yes, I'm with you.
And kind of all of this to say, Pinhead doesn't matter at all.
Not at all.
Pinhead doesn't even matter that much to the movie. You could have made a different Cenobite.
Sure.
Pinhead looks really cool. A person with pins in their head looks cool. I understand why they kept that as an iconic thing, but who it is doesn't matter. And the guys they had, I think it's two different guys in the last two.
Okay.
He looks dumb. And he looks dumb because they're trying to be Doug Bradley. They're trying to get
sure.
to replace Doug Bradley. And that's a mistake. And if they had a man in this role, I think the way to do it would have been to go, we need to come up with something different than Pinhead.
Yeah.
But because they have a woman and it's a different, you know, sort of facial structure and structure, it's like enough to be like, okay, we're not imitating Doug Bradley and this looks cool and it's cool.
Yeah. And she looks very cool. I like the voice modulator
mm-hmm.
thing she's got going because it does kind of give her voice a little bit of that Doug Bradley sound to it, like the warble.
I guess it's bad that people are double upset because it's a trans woman.
Oh, is she? I didn't know that.
It's just that thing of like they would have had no idea. And now they're mad. They're mad because it's a trans woman. But from their perspective, incorrect perspective, that they can't be.
Yeah, the people who are so up in arms about this don't know what to do.
So like their logic has
yeah, right, this right.
position of like, I can't, I don't know. How do I be mad?
How do I be mad?
They'll find a way.
Don't worry. They'll figure it out.
Jamie Clayton's wonderful.
I think she's great. I do. Scary. I think she was wonderful as well.
And also you're right. Cause like Hell Priest does say some like funny things, but it's not, they do the thing that I like. Their things are funny from a perspective of like they're being sincere and it comes off as funny in the situation.
Yeah.
They're never like cracking jokes. I can't remember what she says, but there's a couple times she says things that are like almost like the Cenobites having a misunderstanding of the world and it comes off as kind of funny, or they're being like evilly sarcastic about
yes.
something. And right, it's not like they're saying something and then like turn into each other and be like a good one, right? She's kind of mean and funny.
Yeah. So okay, so you watched enough. Do they throw? But they throw back to other Cenobites, right?
What's that?
Like, so there's the Chatter one.
Yeah, Chatter. Right?
Uh huh. There's the gal with like her head like tied to her shoulders,
and you got her like throat splayed open.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
That looks like the one I think they used to call female Cenobite. There didn't used to be as many female Cenobites.
That's fair.
The lady with her throat open. So I did have a few problems with their design.
Sure.
One is that I thought she had way too much skin. Like her throat is open in a way that if like, you closed that up, you would have had to like fold the. She's just too much.
Yeah, that's fair.
Look at the female Cenobite. She has her throat open, but it's like smaller flaps or whatever.
You mean Pinhead?
No, I think it's female Cenobite. Oh, now there's too many female Cenobites.
I can't find the
right. Yeah. Google up old female Cenobite. You'll see her throat's open, but it's looks like the right amount of like flesh.
Okay.
But the one in the new movie, it just, where did all that skin come from?
That's a fair question.
And I don't.
No, oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
I kind of got past the no leather. They're not wearing the leather. The like
no, they're not. That's true. Stuff.
That's fine. But a weird complaint.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like wet enough.
This is not a gooey movie. And I always picture these movies like in my head that these movies are kind of goopy.
They're like they have open wounds.
Yes.
But they end up looking almost more like alien flesh.
Sure.
Bloody.
Yeah.
But whatever. The overall designs are very good and they look cool and everybody's mm-hmm. cool. The guy that's just like a face with his head's missing and the Chatterer looks cool and. You got the one that's all bound up and
oh, the one that was in like a
straight jacket,
like a straight jacket
situation. He looks
yeah, that was a good little jump scare. I like
oh
that.
Yeah,
when he gets cut loose.
Just wish they were goopier. That's all.
Little goopier. Little like in obviously the first three at least had a lot of practical effects. Mm-hmm. This one maybe it did, and they just I'm so used to seeing it as CG that I don't even notice it anymore. Yeah. But I do kind of miss the practical effects. Of that. So we should just kind of get into it. Our main character, her name is Riley, played by Odessa Zion. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. And she is, I don't even know how to describe. She's not down on her luck, but she is just kind of, she's a recovering addict. She's seeing this guy and she really has no direction like in her life.
Sort of like, she's been in recovery. I think she's out of.
I think you're right.
Like a facility, and now she's living with her brother.
Joey? Is that right? Is that her brother? Or Trevor? Colin? Colin.
Matt? I thought it was Matt, because they screamed okay. And it's my There's, name.
You're right. It is Matt. You're right.
He's not in the movie that much. So that
no, he's not.
Further down the list.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, she's trying to hold it together, and I guess she's like living in this apartment for free, it seems, or not paying her rent.
Not paying her rent, for sure. Oh, I guess we should say that this movie opens with like a giant orgy. Like mm-hmm. sex party, and
it's not enough for us.
Yeah, right. So we've got this character and who is at this party, and he ends up seeing this very attractive woman, and she kind of like lures him into this room, and we're introduced again to, I know him as one of the doctors from ER. That's how I know this guy. He was on ER for a while. I think he was like the boyfriend of, what was that actress's name? Moira Tierney, when she was on ER, I believe. And this guy is kind of like this billionaire eccentric dude. And we are introduced to what do they call it the Lament configuration, or do they call it something else? Or do they just say it's the box?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Because at one point, I think they referred to it as the Leviathan configuration. And I was like, that's not.
So it has, right? The deal is that there's a different configurations of the box.
Sure.
And one of them is.
Okay.
And that's when it looks like the Leviathan, the like dual pyramid.
Yes. Okay.
And one is the Lament. Maybe they call it.
Or maybe maybe at one point, I think Riley actually puts it into the Lament configuration.
Yes.
And they refer to it.
They call it
as
like in the book, they it seems like they mainly call it, what is it? Lemonchard? What's the dude's name?
Limoncello?
Limoncello. Limoncello, yes.
Perfect.
One of the best LaCroix.
So this guy picks up the box, and of course he messes around with it and it cuts him. And this is where we see blood get into the box. And is that where this kind of stops? Is like the Voight character kind of looks up into the sky and there's a giant light.
Yeah. The dude, the kind of unnamed dude that opens it gets all chained up.
Yeah. That's what very Hellraiser style.
Right. The and this was actually through a lot of the beginning of the movie, it really set me up to think it wasn't going to be that gory.
Same.
He gets chained up sort of in the background. We see the chain go in, but then everything sort of happens.
Oh, which I thought was kind of cool, right? Like you're right. You see the chains go in, but then you see him sort of get torn apart it's in the background. It's all blurry. You have no idea what's going on.
Right. And it takes a long time. So I was glad it got gorier toward the end. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but horror movies like to front load their kills, right? Like
we have talked about it, and you're right.
You show a crazy one first to sort of set the tone. And this one, it's just interesting that this one sort of doesn't do that, because it did have me thinking, I guess this isn't going to be that messed up. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that is like a good, it just sort of ramps up more and more and more.
Yeah.
The movie goes on.
I agree. I think Halloween Ends does that in spectacular fashion with that first kill. And you're like, holy, and then,
it's, an hour and a half into the movie.
No, the first one, when they knocks the kid over the railing.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That's pretty wild. So then this is the
I just thought you meant Michael Myers. I thought you meant one of his two kills.
Meant Michael Myers Jr.
The 50% of Michael Myers, the actual killer in the movie's kills in the movie. Go ahead. That's the last thing we're going to say about Halloween.
Yes, that's it. No more. Now we're introduced to Riley and Colin and Trevor and Matt and Nora, who are kind of going to be our main characters here on out. So, Colin and Riley are a pseudo couple. Like they are maybe just some friends with benefits. I think that's kind of what they're described as, and they are doing the biz. And I think this is like part of that really funny real life humor where they both come walking out and everybody like, and they are not really quiet about their escapades, and they walk out and everybody's like sitting in the living room, and it's not a big apartment. And Colin's like, all right, I gotta go. And I like the way she just kind of looks at her brother and is like, I guess you heard all that, huh? He's like, yeah, we did. You better believe it. I don't really remember how I watched this like a couple weeks ago. Riley and Colin kind of devises this plan. He is like a mover, or like he moves things, and he ends up saying that there's a big score and we can make a lot of money on this one little thing. And Riley goes along with it. And I do like that she is she's not this perfect character, right? She's flawed. She's got her issues and she goes along with it. She's okay with figuring this thing out. And so they end up breaking into this safe. And it turns out that inside the safe, there isn't this massive treasure or this money, but it's the Lament configuration. And Riley, they steal it, right? And somehow Riley ends up with it on her own.
He just gives it to her. She just says, because I think they figure it's not really.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
I'll get it appraised or whatever, but I think they're pretty like disappointed in what they find. And it's
right.
Like, oh, you can take it if you want.
That's right. So Riley takes some pills and she gets high and she's sitting on this like merry-go-round thing and she accidentally triggers the box. She realizes that it's a puzzle and she accidentally puts it together. At this point, like she has become not estranged, but she's been kicked out of her apartment.
Her and Colin do some drugging and drinking.
I think
while
right.
They're stealing,
because she comes back and her brother's like, "What is wrong with you?" And yeah. Ends up kicking her out of the apartment because she couldn't stay clean. So the brother's out looking for her, ends up seeing what could be perceived as a drug induced vision. Is as soon as Riley gets the box together, we see Pinhead mm-hmm. and we see the Cenobites kind of starting to pop up, and we're not told anything as to like the six souls or anything like that. And her brother ends up seeing her, which I guess the brother, which is a Matt, is like just walking around and happens to see her. So she must not have gotten far.
I don't think so. Yeah. I don't.
He's just like walking around the neighborhood.
Car, right. She couldn't drive.
Yes.
So she was walking to her car and then goes to the park next to her
That's
car.
Right. That's right.
He goes out looking for her because he's concerned. For a little baby sister.
Yeah, which makes sense. So he sees her and he grabs the box. And I think that this is the first time we see the box cut someone.
Yeah, which is a new...
That is a new thing, right?
New elements of the thing, that a little blade comes out. And if you get cut, that's how you get sort of marked.
If you get cut, you get cut.
You get cut, you get cut.
And that's the way that works.
Circumcised. That's the rules of the box.
That's exactly it. So... Now this kind of becomes a detective story, because at this point, Matt has disappeared. Matt's gone. We don't know where Matt is. And there is like a story where Riley is trying to search the history of this box and who owned it and where did it come from? How does it tie back to her brother? Is it going to help her find her brother? And she starts having these visions again, which when she's describing it to her friend, I say friends, but like, Colin, Trevor, and Nora, who I don't really think, like at least Trevor, who was Matt's boyfriend, and Nora, who was just the other roommate, aren't really her friends.
They're friends with Matt. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They're friends with Riley by proxy.
Yeah.
And Colin obviously is who Colin is. And I will say, when we get there, there's a pretty good twist.
And I'll say this too, and this is just advice for everyone. If you're crazy, don't say, "I'm not crazy." And if you're not crazy too, don't say, "I'm not crazy." A thing that'll make you sound crazy for sure is if you say, "I'm not crazy,"
in this like hyperventilating kind of voice.
Yeah,
yeah, right, right, right. "I'm not crazy." So they start tracing it back, and they end up tracing it back to the woman that we see in the beginning of the movie, who lured the young dude to Voight. And even she gets cut, right?
That lady seems to have some reservations about the things she's done.
That does seem that, but do they find her in an old folks home or like a sanitarium?
Something to that effect. Well, yeah, because it seems to be in ailing health, but she's not that old, but I guess whatever. Some sort of care facility. Her and Riley fight over the box because the lady's trying to get it. She's the one, I believe, that put it in storage.
Okay.
After Voight went missing, and they fight over the box, and then the lady gets cut in the scuffle.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And she ends up, so I guess she's your second soul
mm-hmm.
that gets taken. It's kind of unfortunate that Riley she's putting all of these, it's not hard to root for, but like she is putting all of these people like in the crosshairs of the Cenobites, like all of these people. So Trevor, who was Matt's boyfriend, ends up, you know, getting it. And then Nora ends up getting it. So like all of these people who were in Riley's orbit end up unfortunately dying.
Which I think is sort of like what one of their takes, like addiction, how
oh man, that's yes, I thought the
around you get so affected.
That's kind of a brilliant
And she is obsessed, right, like with figuring this out.
Right. That's right.
Similar too.
I gotta tell you, I thought about that initially and I forgot about it. But that idea of the people, if you're an addict, and I will openly admit that I am an addict, so like the people in your orbit are in the crosshair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like if your addiction kind of gets out of control, like yeah, and the people try to fight for you, that nine and a half times out of 10, they are end up getting hurt in the same process. Right. Man, that's really good. That adds another level to this movie that I think is really smart.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really good. So they end up figuring out that they being Trevor and Riley and Nora and Colin, that they go to this house. And this is the house from the very beginning of the movie. And they're being chased by the Cenobites at this point, which I think is a great little plot device where this house is its own box.
Yeah.
That we didn't realize. And they hit these switches and it is able to, like, there's like a configuration that goes over the house that keeps the Cenobites out. And I was like,
it has sort of whatever you call it, like glyphs and patterns that I assume also stop their like powers.
I take it as like it's a barrier.
Later, yeah,
they get one in. They let one get in.
Yeah, yeah.
The straitjacket one.
And you can see through it. It's
yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
What would you call it? Like lattice work type.
Lattice work is kind of yes, I would agree.
It looks exactly more hellish or whatever. But like they're talking
it's a hell pie.
Cenobites through it. But yeah, the dudes, he's like, your chains can't get me in here.
Right.
See, that's the thing in movies. We've talked about this before, where like movies, I'm not asking them to explain everything. But sure. Just him saying your chains can't get me in here makes me go, okay, there's something. There's
good
something
enough.
Magic. It's good enough. That's all I needed.
Right.
Because you would be sitting there going, well, they shoot chains. Can't they just shoot one through there?
I mean, they've got little holes. Just zip right in there.
Oh, they can't. Okay, good enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you.
Love. I bet I've brought it up every episode.
I think that
you. Thank you for smoking.
Yes, that's right.
When he says the thing, oh, they just say thank.
Oh, he does. You're right.
We invented the thing, so you can smoke in space. Okay.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Good enough for me.
All you need.
So, is this where the? So all our characters get into the, kind of the spot we see in the beginning where Voight, you know, opens the box for the first time, and there has been. So I think Nora is like running around in the catacombs of this house.
Yeah, she finds a hidden passage, gets stuck in
and
there.
There's something down there.
That was scary.
It was scary. It was like, to me, it reminded me a lot of Barbarian.
Yeah.
When we see the mother, not the monster.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. I would have been confused. I would have been, well, do you mean
the bad guy? Yeah. And then the reveal is that Voight has been in this house the entire time, but he's like, half a Cenobite, or he gets his wish, and his wish was that he could have time.
His wish, and I forget which words line up with which things,
right?
I don't, not smart. He wishes for like experiences because being this billionaire, he's experienced every pleasure there is, right?
Yes.
Nothing excites him anymore, and he wants even greater experiences.
Right.
And then what they give him is this contraption that goes through his whole torso, sort of.
It's pretty dope. Like, it's vertically. A cool.
And then it like winds these threads that I think he describes as like they're pulling on all his nerves.
Okay. Okay.
And the implication I got from it is that it wasn't a trick necessarily. It's just like truly what these beings, these Cenobites perceive as the correct, like what you would want out of more experience.
I see what you're saying there. Cause that's kind of the thing, is like the Cenobites are saying, we'll give you exactly what you want, but it may not be exactly what you want.
Like, it's not like a monkey's paw in the way of like, you're getting a trick played on you. It's just that you and these things don't have the same concepts
right.
of pleasure and pain and what that means. And I like that. I like that they're not like bad genies or something. They're just these otherworldly
correct
beings that don't function the same as humans.
And the idea that like you have never experienced pleasure to this level.
Right.
And I don't know if you can. Right. Like the pleasure slash pain is all, I think they're kind of saying that like it's all the same.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So Nora ends up being taken by Pinhead in a pretty cool, you know, she gets chained up and then Pinhead kind of like pulls one of her pins out and like puts it into her, was it her eye or her head?
Throat.
Her throat. Yeah. And like, oh, that's right, because it's going crossways through her
and
throat.
And she's screaming, and it's making her scream.
Oh, man.
All crazy.
Yeah, that I thought, I was like, dang, that's it. Like one of the sounds that has always haunted me is in, is it Dawn of the Dead?
Day of the Dead.
The guy's screaming, and like his when his voice box, it is Day of the Dead, because it's one of the army guys getting his head torn off.
Oh, God.
Oh, my. No, not
is
even.
Not
there's,
him,
no, there's another guy that like, when they're pulling his head off.
I know they pull his head off. I know exactly.
And like he's screaming and like his voice box gets higher as it gets torn apart.
Yeah.
To this day, I can still hear it like that. Yeah. Choke on him is also a good choke on him.
That is so good.
That's a fan. That's a great movie. Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll get there. Maybe. Binge movies beat us to it. So this is the reveal that Colin has been in on this the entire time.
Yes.
Is that he was hired by Voight to find someone to give this box to bring the Cenobites back. And Colin zeroed in on Riley because she was an easy target.
Now, I'm all in. I get the twist. I'm fine. I feel like if you went through this movie knowing the twist and really scrutinized it.
Sure.
It don't make no sense.
Not really. I mean, you could say that Colin is just, I mean, he's using her for sex.
Sure. And he's getting paid. I saw someone say, like, why couldn't, if you just made Colin like a relative of Voight or something
instead of like this, where did he
come from? How did he meet?
I took him as like one of the guys from the party.
Yeah.
But we never, now I'm Halloween ending it right now where I'm just like, I'm writing their story for them.
It just seems like in the situation Voight was in with a big metal contraption through his chest.
Yes.
How did he meet or recontact somebody? And
correct.
How is he paying them? Where's the, I mean, I guess when you're a billionaire, you can
do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want. And
yeah.
Nobody knows. I mean, yeah, because
nobody's gonna stop you.
I'm thinking of money,
Matt. There's two billionaires in the world right now that just flew to space because they could. You know,
because I'm sitting here going like, if I took money out of my Bank of America account, people would know about it. It's like billionaires have different ways of.
There's a different world out there that you and I, who live like blue collar men, have no idea.
Yeah, but it does seem a little thin.
I don't know. I guess I can deal with it, right? Like I can see the billionaire, eccentric billionaire, you know.
Maybe he's had a guy he's been paying since the kid was born, and he's just like, and when I call upon you.
Yeah, right. He's gonna godfather it. Like you won't know. I may not call you tomorrow, but when I do, I'm gonna need a favor.
And then it's like, yeah, you get the call. It's like, dude, I got this big hunk of metal through my chest.
I need some help.
Need you to kill like
this is the part that I can't remember. So we lose Nora, we lose Trevor, we lose Matt, we lose the woman in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So that's four, right? So we do find out that basically what Matt said, my Matt, not Matt from the movie, says that they need five souls, six souls.
I thought it was six.
Okay.
Maybe it ain't.
But it doesn't. I think it's five only because
there's
one away.
Five.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's only five. And they get. I think it is five. No, I don't. It doesn't matter. Basically, so Riley.
Man is five and the devil is six.
Oh, no. You know what? It is six because they count the one Cenobite as one.
That's right.
They kill the straight jacket Cenobite as one of them.
They kill. Joe the Kill the Chatterer.
Oh,
because he's trying to get him through the fence.
Oh, I guess I thought that. I guess I thought that was the straitjacket one.
That's that they get stuck in the door. It's not him. They don't kill him.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Which is interesting, and also that's how they come to a big showdown, because they're like, they're gonna bring that one in to kill that one because they realize you can sacrifice them,
right?
And then that doesn't work out. They end up cutting Colin with it because Colin, right? Yeah.
Again, Colin is armless at this point, which I thought was also a very cool effect, right? Like, he gets his arm kind of ripped off.
Wait a second. Who are we talking about? Who's Colin?
Doesn't the guy that Voight hired, doesn't he get his arm, like, doesn't he have, like, stuff wrapped?
I'm sorry. Who's Matt's boyfriend?
Trevor.
That's Trevor?
Yeah.
He's the one that gets cut by Voight.
Yes.
And at that point, even Colin is like, you could have just killed the Cenobite.
Right, Colin's
like a bad dude, but he's not like the worst dude.
Bingo.
Like, once he realized you can kill these monsters, he's like, well, let's just do that and not kill people.
that's right.
But that is interesting that you can do that, and I also sort of interesting that they don't explore that more.
Maybe they will. I don't know. So Riley ends up, they give Riley a choice here. Riley can accept the gift of the Cenobites, and she gets her brother back. That, I mean, let's be honest, is not her brother.
Right.
But I will say I think if you're a fan of this series, it's a pretty good little fan service moment where we see her brother as like the skinless, goopy thing.
Yeah.
That looks like the boyfriend in One.
Yes, very Frank.
I was like, Frank, thank you, Frank. Yeah, I was like, okay, like that seems just fan servicey enough that I liked that. And so she says, no, I won't accept it. And the Cenobites are pissed.
She trades, I think, at this point, right, is where she trades
Voight.
Colin for Trevor.
Yeah, because they both kind of leave. No, I think, don't they all die? She walks out with Trevor?
Yeah, Trevor's all like, they get him in those almost, what do you call it? Like, it's like wire.
Yes.
Wrapped them all up.
Yes.
Spread out, you know, and then she's like, can I flip someone else?
Okay.
And they agree, and then she says, take Colin. That guy,
Colin. And they were like, okay.
I feel like their names should be switched. I don't know. Trevor sounds like a more mean guy name.
That's fair. That's a good, were you bullied by a Trevor? Is that what just happened? Is that some?
I don't want to.
Okay, no, good enough. And that's kind of how this one ends, is they release the house opens up and the Cenobites kind of leave. But there is kind of a post-credit sequence where Voight gets what he wants, and he ends up losing this contraption that's attached to him. And the Cenobites take him and I am assuming turn him into a new Cenobite.
Seems like it.
That's definitely like they fillet him. And I'm not even like joking, like they cut all of his skin off. And we do get, this is the other part of fan service, is Pinhead said this, I think she says, like, all the
small things. And truth, she does truth, and then it
truth
ends,
care and truth, yeah.
In kind of like a DreamWorks style movie, animated film, it does end with a big, all the Cenobites come back, all the people in the
That's right.
Number to all the small things.
All the, what does she say? What's the line? Like, oh, the sights you will see.
We have such sights to show you.
That's what it is. Yes. Thank you. And that's kind of, I was like, okay, two, like the fans,
right.
I like that where it's not hammered in there.
Yeah. Right?
We didn't get a character named Christy. We didn't get anything like that. You get these.
Who's
two
Christy?
Little, Chrissy? Christy.
Oh, Kirsty.
Kirsty.
Oh,
thank you. Sorry.
Like,
sorry. This is what I meant when I said it's a blind spot. Kirsty. There's no character, you know, like Riley is Riley. She's not a Kirsty allegory or adjacent, but you do get these two bits of fan service at the very end that I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I like that. I dig that.
Oh, I thought it was cool too that Voight's whole deal is just to get an audience with the Cenobites again you know, like, he's not, because for a second I was like, well, why is he gonna get another wish? That doesn't make sense. Riley gets the wish, and but it is like that, he just tries to trap him
Yes.
To make him take back the gift they gave him.
Correct. He's trying to get them. The reason he gave Colin the box to get Riley there, or to get the Cenobites there, is because he wants to give them this wish back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was just kind of a neat. I don't know why he thought it would work, but I guess it did. So
sort of.
Good for him.
He got a different wish. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah. He got to try two of them. That's cool. That's true.
Yeah. I think this is, as far as like the reboots, I would say if you're going to consider this a reboot, I would put it up there as one of the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a fantastic take on these characters. I think it's a pretty brilliant reimagining of this world. It's a shame that it didn't go to theaters, but I'm kind of glad that it didn't, only because this opens the door for more of these.
It's probably the only way, right, that we were going to get another Hellraiser.
The only way. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Hulu needs to find The Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, totally. try to do that.
And I think too, if this had gone to theaters, if it went through like a more traditional studio route,
yeah,
it would have been less risk. Like, it probably would have been more of a direct remake.
Sure.
And less of a new thing. Although, I mean, that does seem. Did you see the Wrong Turn remake?
Oh boy,
which is not. I mean, it's just not a remake.
It's not Wrong Turn.
No,
at all. I think that would. I appreciate them trying to change that. That series went down a path just insane.
But I did like it. I thought it was okay.
I need to rewatch it, but I was not a. And look, I think post everything after Wrong Turn 2 is trash.
Sure.
Is just the most abysmal. Yeah.
But,
like Hatchet.
Oh yeah, but that goes too far, right?
Yeah,
in a direction that's just like, well, this isn't Wrong. This is just a different movie. Like,
sure,
you put the Wrong Turn name on,
right?
But I guess I still maybe applaud that more than just a direct remake of the first movie. Maybe
I think when it comes to, if you're gonna remake something, you need to, it's stupid to just redo it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Eat for like, beat, right? Like
Evil Dead, Hellraiser. Those are kind of the only two that I could think of that reinvent the wheel, sort of.
They take
the bones of what the original one was and then do their own thing. Texas Chainsaw Massacre didn't really change anything. Friday the 13th did not change anything.
They smashed several movies into one.
That's true. The Halloween remake, both not, well, I guess there's only one remake. The Rob Zombie one does do something a little different, but not totally.
And I think what you get in a lot of those is like, they do this thing where it's like, okay. It's Halloween, but...
Right.
And that's never... It seems less good than just being like, we're going to take sort of the theme, some of the visuals, and write just a new story with those elements,
mm-hmm.
instead of being like, what if there's a subplot where maybe Freddy didn't do it?
I don't even mind the subplot that Freddy didn't do it.
I wish he didn't do it. I agree with you.
If best you tell way... me... Yes. But if that remake had doubled down on him being innocent.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, though, is then you make your killer of that movie the good guy.
But that's what's so good. But well, and also he is killing innocent people. He's getting
revenge. That's fair. That's
on
those
parents. So he's still bad.
Yeah, that's OK. But
his reasons are more sympathetic. And I think that's very cool.
We're doing Nightmare on Elm Street next, aren't we?
I would love to.
I think we might. I keep waiting for Scream Factory. I have the Friday the 13th box set and the Halloween box set. I keep waiting for that Nightmare box set, but I don't know. It's coming anytime soon.
But Kevin's mad at us. Kevin says we're doing too many horror movies.
Too many horror movies.
Kevin's getting scared.
Getting a little spooked out. Yes, I highly recommend this. Go find it on Hulu. Everybody's got Hulu at this point. It's absolutely worth your time. Support these guys. Go check out the part that does suck is that David Goyer is listed as a co-writer on this, and that guy is the worst. I hate David Goyer so much. But David Bruckner, go check out the other David Bruckner's other movies. The, like I said, the segments in VHS, Southbound, which is also the guys that did the new Scream movie, the Radio Silent guys, also did like a kind of VHS style segmented movie called Southbound. And David Bruckner did the segment called The Accident in that. The Ritual also is fantastic. Go read the book. I don't normally recommend that, but I did read the book, so you have to read it too. And The Night House. You know where to find us. We don't need to go all over that stuff. Matt, you actually have a new single coming out or out.
It's out. I do. It's called Waste of Time.
It's good.
It's on all the things.
I like it.
Thank you.
I pre-saved it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to do something. I don't know.
But you told me to do it and I did.
It's very, very much like when people say rate and review it really helps out the show. I've never seen what that does.
Matt is a very talented musician. So go check that out on Spotify and all that good stuff. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.